Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm Bob Mendelson, and this is the Bob's Your Uncle podcast. Today we speak with Jerry Smith, a doctor, a professor at Sydney University, in multi-faith and interfaith conversation. What is that all about? And how can anyone be involved? Stay tuned. This is a fascinating interview. You can now find us and comment to us wherever you get your podcasts. Tell us what matters to you, what triggers your joy, what bothers you in the world. Let us know. We'll see where the Spirit leads us. Wherever you are just now, whether you're out for your evening constitutional, or you're here in Australia, or back in the United States with friends, or all by yourself with your headset on, hey, wherever you are, thanks for joining us these 18 minutes. Of note, the opinions are strictly my own and those of my guests. On this date in history, 18th of April in 1506, Pope Julius II laid the first stone of the new St. Peter's Basilica in Vatican City. On the 18th of April in 1775, one if by land, two if by sea, this is the date of Paul Revere's famous midnight ride to warn Bostonians of imminent danger from British troops. And in San Francisco in 1906, this is the date of the great earthquake that killed 3,000 to 6,000 people. And that's the historical marker of the week. You may not know it, but I've worked with the organization Jews for Jesus for 45 years, and some people get it a little confused. Are you an interfaith movement? Do you have young people? Do you have old people? Is it a stuck-in-the-mud religion? And so whenever I hear about interfaith stuff, and our guest today and next week, is a rich resource for us. She's a professor at Sydney University. I asked her on an airplane from Hobart to Sydney, and then again in our interview, what it was that triggered her own interest in this very wide topic. And I think you'll like who she is. Stay tuned. Paul.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely very much interested in thinking about how these ideas actually impact the world. And so thinking about, you know, why are there so few young people participating in this thing called interfaith, I felt was a very real problem. And because it really gets down to like the future of how, as a society, will we engage with religious difference? And if you've got this generations coming up that aren't very interested in the social movement that is trying to answer the question of how do we deal with difference, with religious and spiritual difference, then what does that mean for the future? You know, what's the consequence of that going to be?
Jerry Smith, I am so grateful that you've joined us today on the Bob's Your Uncle podcast. Thanks for taking the time. You are living in sometimes in Hobart, Tasmania, sometimes in Sydney, Australia. What makes you live in two different cities?
The big answer to that is casualization within academia, which requires people to take on very short kind of teaching contracts. And so I kind of found myself in a position where there was a I could go and teach down at Sydney for a semester, but I had some teaching that I could do up in Hobart. So I thought, you know, the best option is to take on everything that I was offered and try to do both. And this is very much the reality of people in my position who have our early career academics, is that we do a lot of these short casual contracts. We go everywhere, we go where we need to be and try and be everywhere at once. So that's how I've kind of ended up in this situation. Like, I never thought that I would be the one giving the lecture. When I sat in the lecture hall listening to my religious studies and religion lectures, I never thought that I'd be the one up there one day. So it is very uncanny. It's like, am I really expert enough to be here? Like,
You have to
it's
be an expert compared to your teachers or an expert compared to your students in order to be in that position.
yeah, I think it's not an expert at all. It seems that there's a bit of a move to like not think about people as experts or teachers as experts, and to think more about what they call student-centered learning, and kind of try to make the teaching experience more democratic in that, you know, everyone is coming to, you know, offer something in the teaching scenario, and that you as the teacher don't have to know everything. You don't have to be the absolute genius that, you know, endows the very appreciative students with your incredible intellect. It's more like, you know, we're all coming, we're all gonna you know, I can facilitate a discussion, I can facilitate people, you know, exploring ideas, but and I can, you know, give some context or give some explanation, but ultimately, like, you know, we all bring something, and that it's kind of the student learns through multiple mediums and by engaging with multiple voices rather than listening to the single person at the front, I guess.
When I was a kid and I wanted to know something, I would look in the World Book Encyclopedia, which was sitting there in our lounge. And if it wasn't in there, I would get on my bicycle, ride to the library, and I would go to the librarian and inquire. And if she didn't know, she would go to the card catalog and she would look up a book and we'd go to 572 or whatever it was, and the Dewey Decimal System, and we'd find the book on it. In these days, what I call the democratization of information has taken the place of that librarian and that encyclopedia. So we get Wikipedia, which is as valuable as the bottom of your shoes, because it's anyone can say anything and that could be informing. Is that a danger of the relinquishing of the professor role?
Yeah, good question. I think because even like when, you know, when I teach and a student wants, you know, you read it, you do your marking, and students are quoting or referencing Wikipedia, you know, your instant response is to say, do not cite Wikipedia. Ultimately, where you need to be drawing your information from are peer-reviewed scholarly sources.
Jerry, tell us how it was that you came to be a PhD. This is not something you ever wanted to be.
It was very much, I guess, a lot of luck in that when I did my honours, I met at a conference, I met a couple of scholars who had just started a had just gotten an Australian Research Council grant, and so they were just at the beginning of this grant to study religious diversity in Australia, and they happened to watch my conference presentation. And then a few months later, they were kind of looking for people to take on the PhD role in this project. And so I got the chance to apply for that. So it was kind of just by chance that I had was lucky to have known about it and was able to then, try for that.
Jerry, you've made some points about Gen Z and millennials. Can you tell me about those? Like, which is the older?
Millennials. So millennials basically, like I'm 28. I think the cutoff for millennial is 1996. Well, that was the cutoff that I used for that paper. The other people have different ideas. So basically millennials are people that are just on the cusp of turning 30, and also ones that are in their 30s, like late 30s. So that's where the millennials are at the moment. And then Gen Z, people that I teach at university, all undergrads, I go, "Oh, you Gen Zers." Yeah. So anyone born after 96.
You make a lot of points about what you call the interfaith movement. And I wonder if there's a single interfaith movement or if it's a multi-layered definition. Are there interfaith movements?
I think in the literature it gets described as a single movement. As academics, we kind of like to lump everyone together into this category to make it into a, something that we can talk about.
And you critique it in a very clear way, representing, I think you had five key challenges that are extant and, if you will, may well doom the interfaith movement if it doesn't deal with these challenges.
So I think I can give you a summary of like the gist that kind of brings them all together. So I guess it kind of to make sense of this, I kind of have to tell a bit of a story about how I came into studying this topic. So part of this research was I really wanted to do field work where I could attend the events being put on by these interfaith organizations. And I wanted to go and talk to people there and see, what they were doing, what kinds of things they talked about, who was invited, the kind of language that they were using. And I was going to these events and I realized that I was often the youngest person in the room by quite a lot. And that there was only a handful often of people that were within my generation. And I found this very perplexing. I was like, why? What's going on here? Why is this happening? And so that encouraged me to then, in my interviews, to ask people, "Oh, do you have any issues with including young people?" And they said, "Yes, it's something that we've been thinking about is why can't we, interest young people?" And so I kind of took on that question, and I basically, to sum it up, I'd say it's because young people are too busy. So this is not just a issue of interfaith, is that young people, millennials and Gen Z, are just under a lot of pressure to do and aren't generally volunteering for these kinds of initiatives or organizations, not just related to interfaith. There's a kind of feeling that young people are under so much pressure from financial instability, demands of family, demands of study, that they just don't have the time or the capacity to be engaging with these kinds of movements. Another issue is that a lot of these organizations, whilst they do have elements of social activism, are kind of more interested in the dialogue aspect of sitting and talking. And I interviewed someone called Niveditha Balachandra. Niveditha, sorry, I messed up the last name. I'll have to have a look. Have a look on the article and you can see her full name. So
Well done,
Nivi
Karen.
was, she was the one of the founders of this organization called Interaction, and that was a youth-led interfaith group. And she kind of said, well, Yeah, like, we weren't really interested in doing what she called tea and biscuit interfaith. We wanted to go out and do things. We wanted to have, give food to people that we that needed it. We wanted to be involved in our community.
The moment I started talking with Jerry Smith, I knew this was going to be a two-part episode. She has so much to say. I love her enthusiasm, her clarity, and she's going to talk much more next week. So you'll want to come back and listen to that part two of two in our conversation. She's going to talk about that tea biscuits, the tea and biscuits style of dialogue, that is, sit around and talk and not do anything, versus the action that she says both Gen Z and millennials are keen to accomplish. I really value what she has to say. Her article, I'll put the link to her article, which is basically the summary of her PhD. It's her center point. You'll enjoy getting to know her this week and next week. I hope you'll come back then. Thanks. In the meantime, what do you think about all this? Why don't you write me right here where you're getting your podcast? Or if you want to write me, bobmendo@aol.com. I'd love to hear your response so far to this great interview. And I will also tell you how to reach Jerry Smith in Sydney. She's split time between Hobart and Sydney. Yeah, you'll get to. So tell me what you're thinking. Thanks so much. Monday night begins the Jewish holiday of Passover. In light of that, I'd read this from John chapter 1, because every week we read from a portion of the greatest bestseller of all time, that's the Bible. Here it is in John chapter 1. John's testimony when the Jewish leadership from Jerusalem sent priests to ask him, "Who are you?" He didn't deny it, but he confessed, "I'm not the Messiah." "Well, what then? Are you Elijah?" He said, "No." "Are you the prophet?" "No," he answered. "Well, who are you then? We need to give an answer to those who sent us. What can you tell us about yourself?" And he said, "I'm a voice of one crying in the wilderness, 'Make straight the way of the Lord,' just as Isaiah prophesied." Until next week, then, when things seem bleak or uncertain, look up to God. He's in his heaven. And Bob's your uncle. Shalom.